the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
Welcome to a Friday. Oh, we have no audio. No audio on the shot. Hold on. Let me add the audio to the shot. I had a camera meltdown here. So, okay. Audio's back. I haven't forgotten about you, YouTube. I had a camera meltdown. My main camera that I use will not work with my software that I use to stream video. So I had to put in my backup camera, which works fine. And the other camera works fine everywhere else, just not with this software. That's what I mean when I talk about gremlins invading my studio. So I apologize for that momentary output audio. Anyway, it is a Friday, so that's good news. Yes, this weekend, actually Sunday, I will be out at Fort Lauderdale Beach at Las Solas and A1A, right on the beach, well, across the street from the beach, with the Fur the Love Pet Fest. It's a National Love Your Pet Day event. Sunday is National Love Your Pet Day, so I'll be out there with a booth with my pet portraits and other stuff. So if you're in South Florida, Sunday, come to Fort Lauderdale Beach. It'll be a beautiful day. Okay, so now, sorry, I freaked out some people with the audio problems. It's all good. We're all good. Today, Digby joins us, and I can tell you that we cover all kinds of stuff. And I can do this because we actually taped it about an hour ago. So it's still fresh. It's all new, but she had stuff she needed to do this afternoon. And I kind of enjoy it when I have things on tape because then I can mess around in the chat room with you guys, or the chat rooms, I should say, because we've got the YouTube chat room and then the other chat room at NicoleSandler.com on the Listen Live page. So anyway, before we get to Digby, and it runs long. Sometimes when Digby and I start talking, we just keep going. But I do want to get this in because yesterday I started to tell you about this Michelle Tafoya thing that was bugging me. For those who don't remember or know what I'm talking about, she was, up until the end of the Super Bowl, an NFL sideline reporter, I guess. She's been doing it for many years. I'm not a sports fan. I'm not a football person. So I don't really know what kind of a job she did. But I know her name. I remembered the name Michelle Tafoya. I'm like, how do I know that person? Because she used to be a switchboarder at KLOS radio station in Los Angeles, answering phones on the Mark and Brian program when I was the producer from 1990 to 94. It's such a small world because Linda in the chat room also was a switchboarder. People would volunteer their time to come in and do this. Well, Michelle Tafoya apparently went on to have a career in the NFL. And the only reason I'm mentioning her is because she made it clear that this Super Bowl was going to be her last game. And then she was moving on. And what did she move on to? Republican politics. Yeah, baby. Ugh. And I noticed there was a meme that showed up on the interwebs. I'm putting it up on the screen right now. That's a picture of Michelle Tafoya. And apparently she said on the Fox Not News channel, talking to Tucker Carlson or one of those other inbreds, quote, "It breaks my heart that my kids are being taught that skin color matters." She said that. Hey, Michelle, skin color shouldn't matter, but it still does. And the fact that you don't know that is really disturbing. So let's take a little look at how this manifests itself. And we'll start in the world of sports because that's where she comes from, right? We just saw what happened with the Olympics with the Russian skater, Kamila Valeria or something like that, who is apparently one of the best skaters in the world. Problem is, she failed a drug test. Now, the test was given back in December, but for some reason, the lab didn't give the results until 6 weeks later when the games were already underway. That alone should tell you there's a problem there. But this skater, who shouldn't have been skating in the first place, never mind the results of her test, Russia has been suspended from the Olympics because of doping scandals. But the IOC, for whatever reason, still lets them participate, just instead of under the name of Russia, it's the Russian Olympic Committee? Oh, that makes all the difference in the world. Hashtag sarcasm. So she shouldn't have been, none of the Russians should have been there, frankly. Either they're going to have a law, a rule against doping, or they're not. Okay, so she's allowed to skate. Regardless, she's allowed to skate. But there was a woman named Sha'Carri Richardson, who was an American athlete. I want to say a sprinter, but don't quote me on that. Who was bumped off of the Olympic team because she tested positive for cannabis some months ago. Let me tell you something, a little something from a veteran pot smoker here. Cannabis is not a performance-enhancing drug. There's a reason I will never, ever smoke pot before I come on the air. Because it is not a performance-enhancing drug. Got it? But she was kept from participating because of a positive test for cannabis. Yet this 15-year-old, who, by the way, she is a victim of child abuse, in case anyone was not sure of that, she was allowed to participate. Shouldn't have been. What's the difference? Could it be that Sha'Carri Richardson is a black woman? Possibly. You know, we could take it a step further. Today, Kim Potter was sentenced. You know who Kim Potter is. She is the white former police officer from Minnesota who shot and killed a black man, a very young black man named Dante Wright. Allegedly, she claims, she thought she was pulling her taser and firing her taser, but she shot him dead. Now, look, I'm somebody who doesn't ever deal with guns, but I'd still know the difference between a service weapon, a real gun, and a taser. They look different. They feel different. They're different weights. And, well, Kim Potter was sentenced today to 2 years. 2 years for killing Dante Wright. On the other hand, there was another sentencing that took place just this past week. A black woman, there's your difference, black woman who was sentenced last week to 6 years and one day in prison for trying to register to vote in 2019 despite having a felony conviction. Now, she says she was the victim of complicated voting laws in Tennessee that appeared to confuse even election officials, you think? Prosecutors in Memphis said that, accidentally or not, this woman, Pamela Moses, 44-year-old black woman, broke the law. She's a Black Lives Matter activist. Her lawyer says election officials gave her advice that they later corrected while she was seeking to have her voting rights restored. Voting rights activists say Mrs. Moses' lengthy sentence underscores racial disparities in the criminal justice system when it comes to voting fraud cases. You think? When it comes to anything. Especially since white men who have been charged in more straightforward instances of voting fraud have received probation or just days of imprisonment. But this black woman sentenced to 6 years and a day because she tried to register to vote after the election officials gave her bad information. What's the difference? She's black. Then there's this mall. You saw the video of this the mall fight in New Jersey the other day. Did you see this? Hold on, I think I've got it handy. Let's see if I can pull it up real quickly. This is stunning. So here, I'm going to, if you're watching on a video feed, I'll put up the video, and it's astounding. So in a mall in New Jersey, this here, let me just run the video and I'll talk you through it. You see, there's two kids fighting. There's a white kid pummeling a black kid. The black kid's on the ground. The white kid was on. Oh shoot! And again, I'm talking you through the video, and there's no audio on the video. So what we saw, sorry about that, was the black kid on the ground, the white kid on top of him, pummeling him. The cops come over to break it up. They separate them. One cop puts the white kid on a sofa and says, "You sit there, I'll be back," and then goes over to assist the other cop who's got the black kid pinned to the ground and handcuffed while the white kid is sitting unattended on the couch. Witnesses say the white kid was the aggressor, but who did the cops tackle to the ground and handcuff? The black kid. Why? Because he's black. Tell me again what Michelle Tafoya said. "It breaks my heart that my kids are being taught that skin color matters." Well, Michelle, it breaks my heart that skin color still matters when it shouldn't. Unfortunately, it matters to the wrong people. Apparently, she's one of them. It is a Friday. I could go on, but you get the idea. I need a palate cleanser after that. So I guess the thing to do is bring in Digby. when all else fails, or when you wonder, okay, that's not going to work, is it? Why is it doing that? That's not supposed to do that. Let's see if it still does it when I hit the video. Let's see if we can play Digby. I may have to back out and play it another way, but we'll see. Spitting chewing gum here. All right, let's try this the real way. All right, fingers crossed.
Thrilled when we get to spend some time with Digby. And especially at the end of a week, because Digby, welcome back to the show. I don't know about you, but I'm still having a hard time keeping track of everything that happened in the course of a week. And this week was no different really than any other week, but it seems like it's just been one thing after another after another. It's exhausting.
Oh, it is exhausting. I feel like it's been that way for the last, 5-6 years.
Yeah.
And the news cycle has just accelerated. And some of that has to do with social media, but it's also, there's so much. And it's hard to, sort of absorb it all and not come out feeling a little bit crazy.
Right.
It feels like, everything is just in turmoil. We're in just such a weirdly chaotic political and cultural time. I guess we're in transition, and I don't know exactly where it's going. So, we're just kind of living through the churn of it. And it is overwhelming. I agree with you.
Right. I think back to during the previous administration, those 4 years. At the end of Trump's term, I thought things would start getting somewhat back to normal. But I think we're so far out of the realm of normalcy that I honestly don't know that we can ever get back to where we were. And it makes me think, during the campaign, there were those on the left who were just so anti-Joe Biden. And, I like Susan Sarandon, but I'm thinking Susan Sarandon, who said, well, maybe we just have to go there. Things have to get so bad that, and so we can, finally turn things around. I think that's a flawed strategy. What do you think?
I totally agree with you. I mean, that's the old heighten the contradictions, right? We have, in order to really have true change, we have to let it, we have to hit bottom or whatever. Lives are at stake.
Yeah.
And of course, this past election was particularly, it was an acute sort of problem in that, we were living through a unprecedented pandemic. We had, Donald Trump and his anti-democratic, coup attempt. And I mean, which he was attempting to do even before the election, as we well remember. I mean, this was not the time for that kind of, sort of extremist strategy to allow these people to take any kind of to seize any kind of power or maintain any kind of power. I mean, we knew how bad that was at the time, and people were literally dying in droves.
Right. And what we learned is there is no bottom. When you think you've reached rock bottom, you find out there's like three more sub-basements.
below.
Well, it's true. And they just continue to go further and further into the extremes. I mean, I wrote a piece this week, actually. It was up on Salon Today, which is about, you know, there's a lot of this, you know, hemming and hawing and hand-wringing and pearl-clutching over how the Democrats have gone too far left and, oh, my God, we're alienating middle America. And, you know, I wrote, you know, this is a perennial thing. You remember this. I remember this. This has been going on as long as either of us have been following politics, where there's always this sort of rush to say that, you know, whenever the Democrats have a problem, it's always because they went too far left, and we've got to tack back to the middle, and to see people talking about rural America, and they've got to, you know, and I, as I put it in my piece, you know, you're going to see candidates now with camo trucker hats and talking about, you know, the good old days, and, you know, their favorite show is Mayberry RFD and Family Values and all the rest of this crapola, you know, because that's what they are. Always do. Now there's nothing new about this part, and of course the mainstream media, that Mike Allen of Axios had a big thing today, and had Matt Bai in the Washington Post going on and on about this stuff, and you know, there's a lot of discussion of this. Oh, you know, the Democrats have really blown it, they've gone too far left. Well,
we
they
haven't though. Right, they do. This is their standard operating procedure. This is their playbook. But you know, the fact remains that is just pure
bullshit.
It's bullshit. It's not true. I mean, the really left policies that, sure, Joe Biden said he supported, haven't gone through because, well, thank you, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, if we want to bring it down to, you know, basics. That stuff didn't pass. And one might say, if it had, things would be a hell of a lot better now than they are.
Well, of course. And look, I mean, this is... When you have somebody, you know, Chris Coons and Amy Klobuchar and people like that behind the Democratic agenda, it's not too far left, just definitionally, because those people are not left-wing.
Right.
They are center-left, mainstream liberal Democrats, right? I mean, there's nothing out of the mainstream about most of those senators. I mean, there are some who are further left. Bernie Sanders is further left. Elizabeth Warren's further left. And by the way, they were all on board, too.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was the most unified Democratic Party ever, except for those two outliers who were out there, you know, causing trouble, and we all know that story. And so this idea, but you know, Joe Manchin is not the median Democrat in this country. He is not. He is a right wing Democrat by any, you know, current standard.
Any standard.
And,
right.
And I don't know what Kyrsten Sinema is. She's something, you know, she's a Martian Democrat as far as I can tell. So, you know, this is a ridiculous critique. And particularly since, I mean, look, you know, Biden got quite a bit done. I mean, they got out that American Rescue Plan. They got the infrastructure plan.
Yep.
You know, there's been a lot of work done under very, very difficult circumstances of a very closely divided Congress and a huge, you know, headwinds with the pandemic and the, you know, the variants coming back foreign policy crises and all this stuff. So, you know, look, I'm not buying it. I get it that they're always going to say that. That's part of the media's narrative, and there's nothing you can do about it. But what's driving me crazy is that, you know, all you have to do is look at what's changed and what's different. And what's different this time is the Republican Party is batshit crazy.
That's right.
They've lost their minds. And this is not the usual story. That's where the story is. The Democrats having in disarray and having arguments and left and blah, blah, blah. Old news. They do that. This is what happens in every difficult election cycle. What is happening on the right, however, is truly unprecedented. I've never seen anything like this. They're not only going after... I mean, there was a story of Democrats in Pennsylvania, in rural Pennsylvania, who are fearing for their lives from their neighbors, from Republican neighbors. And of course, the story was presented as if, boy, it's a big problem for Democrats that they're in fear for their lives. And I'm going, you know, I don't think you've really nailed the problem here.
Right.
The problem is these crazy Republicans who are so intolerant that they can't even stand having a couple of Democrats in their neighborhood anymore. I mean, people tell me I have to bring my signs in, you know, and I
know.
Tell, don't put that bumper sticker on, you know, you'll get your car vandalized. I mean, this is nuts. These people are out of their minds. And that, you know, and of course there's all the official stuff that's happening with, you know, trying to plant, you know, a Trumpish election officials into office so that they can, you know, rig the election
right.
in their favor if that's necessary. You've got that going on all over the country. You've got all this vote suppression. You've got all this, you know, voter intimidation stuff going on. And then you've got this crazy stuff banning books and you know, intimidating school board members and public health officials. You've got this this crazy convoy up in Canada that's probably going to be happening here in the U.S. too, which is about anti-masking and anti-vaccines. Yeah. And they go and interview these people, and they're completely out of their minds. That, to me, is where the extremism is. It's not, you know, it's not Bernie Sanders.
No, of course not. And that's the point.
Come on.
And Digby, you just hit the nail on the head there. The thing is, you can trace all of this back to where the craziness, the insanity, and the anger and the outrage is coming from. And it's not Bernie Sanders. It's not the squad. It is Fox. It's right-wing propaganda media that should not be allowed. Again, I sound like a broken record here, but they couldn't do that stuff on your local Fox-affiliated TV station that transmits its signal over the air, because they're not allowed to put out lies and call it news. They're not allowed to make shit up and call themselves news. The FCC has jurisdiction over that, and they'll take their license. But a cable network doesn't have a license, a broadcast license, and they're not under the jurisdiction of the FCC. And therefore, a company like Fox can put on a channel, brand it news, and it's complete fiction. And the people who watch it think, well, it's a news channel. Of course they're telling me the truth. They're all freaking out. Why didn't the rest of the media report on this Durham report that said Hillary Clinton infiltrated the Trump campaign office and his apartment and stole? Because it's not true. You know, that's the whole thing that freaks me out. Half of this country, or a good part of it, is outraged that this stuff is going on, and they believe it's going on because their so-called news channel tells them it is, and it's a lie. It's all lies.
Oh, it completely, and it's getting worse. I mean, I think, you know, I hesitate to say this, but, you know, I think Fox was a little bit more, I don't know, respectable under Roger Ailes.
Yeah, right.
Which I never thought I would say anything like that, but, you know, there was some sort of, you know, it was kind of, you know, hypocrisy is the tribute vice pays to virtue, you know. I mean, they at least were trying to pretend that they cared about credibility, even though we know they didn't. But they wouldn't go this far. I mean,
right.
The stuff that someone like Tucker Carlson is out there saying, I mean, it is complete and utter. I mean, it's not even a full degree of difference from Alex Jones.
No.
At this point.
Right.
You know, a complete nut. And this guy's out there, he says this, he laughs maniacally. I mean, it's freaky. And, you know, those of us, I mean, I unfortunately, you know, have to watch a bit of this stuff because, you know, I have to write about it.
Right.
And it's just never failing whenever I'm watching. I mean, I've watched it for years, you know, as little as I can get away with, but I still have to do it. And it lately, it is completely off the rails. I mean, it is crazy. And it's not just the kind of Penny Annie stuff like, you know, Dr. Seuss and Mr. Potato Head. I mean,
right.
That's ridiculous, right? And it's annoying. But, you know, this stuff is really nutty. I mean, the stuff they're doing about the Ukraine situation,
yeah.
Which is just, you know, it's just daffy. I mean, you sit there and you listen to it and you're going, what, you know, where, what are they getting out of this? I mean, how does this benefit them? And I think I'm really to the point where I believe it's purely about chaos, that it's purely about just, you know, churning this base of people. And you can kind of see that reflected. I don't know if you read this op-ed by Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times.
No, when
or a column, actually, not an op-ed.
Right.
Where she was up in Ottawa and she interviewed a lot of these people, and these this is a crazy coalition. You know what I mean? I mean, this is not even. I mean, I've been calling it Wingnut Woodstock for a long time, and it's a lot more that way than I even realized. You know, there's just this strange kind of toxic kind of mixture of conspiracy theories and New Age stuff and crazy right wing militia stuff and gun rights. I mean, it is nutty. And the thing is, these people are having the time of their lives.
Oh, yeah.
They are partying. I mean, this is their idea of fun. This is what, you know, they are just really feeling great joy. And they're feeling great joy in what is underlying all this is tremendous hostility and anger and grievance and, you know, all this ugly negativity toward their fellow, well, and the fellow Canadians up there and fellow Americans here, where,
right.
You know, I mean, this is truly kind of and people keep saying, well, it's a civil war, and I'm kind of thinking, it is literally becoming a culture war, and I mean that in the literal sense of war. I mean, we're dealing with violence now.
Right, but you know what? The other thing to think about is that this is a minority in Canada. The attitudes toward the vaccine are very supportive. 80% of Canadians are fully vaccinated. Truckers, it's still in the 80% range. These people are outliers, and yet they've basically seized the capital city and major entries into crossings between the U.S. and Canada. It's not the majority speaking, and we're experiencing that same thing here, because the Trumpers, the insurrectionists, the burn it down kind of contingent, they're a minority. They're just louder than the rest of us right now.
And they have the full. They have the Republican Party, the official Republican
Party.
Well,
there's
that. Firmly in their grasp.
Yeah.
They are terrified of these people to the extent that, you know, I mean, the ones that even still have a conscience, and I'm not sure how many there are.
Mm-mm.
There are some, and the rest of them have just bought into it, you know, either cynically because it's a path to power or because they're just as deluded as the other Fox viewers who are, you know, buying into all this stuff. And they have, you know, one of the two major American political parties firmly in their grasp. They are, you know, they're the ones who, let me throw out some more metaphors. They're driving the bus.
Yeah.
And they'll run over anybody who gets in their way. I mean, in fact, in the piece that I wrote today, I was talking about this, the fact that all around the country, there are more primary challenges in the Republican Party than there've ever been before.
Wow.
And they are all, you know, far right, Trumper, you know, extremists. And I mean, you know, I mean, we're talking Lauren Boebert.
Yeah.
Seems like a mainstreamer compared to some of these people.
Right.
I mean, they are out there. This is all the Marjorie Taylor Greening of the Republican Party.
Yes. And not only are they running for congressional seats, they're running to take over school boards and election supervisor offices.
Absolutely. They are hyper involved. Like, you know, it's their, you know, they are having their day in the sun. You know, this is them, you know, Wingnut Woodstock. And now they're, you know, coming back to town and they're going to start their own band. Right. I mean,
right.
this is the inspiration here is coming January 6th, rather than being, you know, something that's brought everybody up short and went, whoa, we better get a hold of ourselves here. It did the opposite. It inspired them to more. And you're seeing this happen all over the country. And you have this guy down there in Florida where you are, you know, Donald Trump, who is, you know, playing kingmaker with all of this. And they're terrified of being on the wrong side of him. And it partially has to do with money. There was an article that Axios put out this week that I thought was just fascinating, because this kind of tells, it informs this loyalty in a way that I hadn't seen it before, which was that they have, you know, he has really captured the small donor market of the right, of the Republicans.
It's amazing.
And they are sending money, they're sending him so much more money than they're sending to anybody else.
Wow.
And so, you know, Trump being in a position to dole out money from his PACs to, you know, to various candidates, it's hugely influential. Now, they're afraid because he has a tendency not to spend any money on anyone but himself.
That's right.
So, you know, they're sitting there going, geez, I wonder, are we going to see any of this stuff? You know, but nonetheless, they don't really have a choice because, you know, and the Trump people just put out a flurry of, I mean, you know, you think the Democratic email pitches are annoying? You haven't seen anything.
Oh, my God. Well, I somehow, somebody put me on one of those lists. And I knew I could tell immediately when it happened because my main email address, I have kept clean from all of those, these many years. Mm-hmm. And then Monday they started, right? And it started one at like 10 in the morning. And then I got one the next hour. And by the, you know, an hour later, I had at least 20 emails from 20 different email addresses, all right wing crazy shit like this.
Oh,
and, you know, I looked at the bottom, the unsubscribe link. And interestingly enough, what it comes up with when you click it was the same. They all said I had opted in back in January or December of last year, which I never did. Anyway, I was able to trace it back to the marketing company who sends out these emails. And it's a company called ParamountCommunication.com. No communications. ParamountCommunication.com. And I first sent them an email like, stop fucking spamming me. And then, of course, when they didn't respond within 3 minutes, I got the phone number and I called and I let loose on this woman. And I also reported them to the FTC. And when I actually didn't use the online form because there was no way to explain what they had done, how they took my email address somehow and populated to all these different addresses. I called and I spoke to a human being, and they only have a place to write in one offense per complaint. But when I explained what is happening, she goes, oh yeah, that's not allowed. That's not good. I don't know if they'll do anything, but this is the kind of shit they pull. Somehow somebody put my email on one list and I got, in the matter of hours, at least 100 different messages.
Oh, my God.
From different accounts.
This Axios article went into all of that about all these sort of unethical, fundraising pitches that they're doing online. And you know, you recall that one of them was that they were putting, you know, you think that you're donating $20 and it ends up you've agreed to donate $200 a month or something.
Right,
you know?
Or every week. They're taking it out every week. And, right.
Yeah, I mean, that was another scam that they were pulling. And it's having a huge effect on the Republican Party because even if someone thought in their district that it might be worth it to them that there was a, you know, some kind of a pathway to not, you know, dealing with Donald Trump and to be able to just, you know, sort of run their own race and not be an overt Trumper or, you know, go with one of the litmus tests, which is you have to say that the 2020 election was stolen and, you know, you have to go along with a big lie. You know, if there's somebody who wanted to avoid that, they're at a point where it's very, very difficult because they can't get the money. The money's all being, you know, hoovered up by Donald Trump, which just so figures, right? I mean, it just is so typical. Who couldn't have anticipated that he would do that? That would be the first thing he did when he left the White House is, you know, ensure that this flow of small donor money was coming to him. So, you know, that's another part of the problem for them. I mean, they've completely, you know, they've gone further off the rails after January 6th, after Donald Trump left office, than they were before. And I think that part of it, I was not anticipating that.
No.
I thought that it would, you know.
I thought that the night, January 6th, when they came back into session after the Capitol had been cleared, and Lindsey Graham gets up there and says, I tried. I was with him. I'm not with him anymore. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I thought, I mean, I think I did shed a few tears. I thought that the madness was finally going to end, that the curtain had been pulled back behind, around the man behind the curtain. I thought that finally it was going to be over because America would come to its senses. And what happened is they've doubled down on it. That was like a typical tourist day at the Capitol? Are you fucking kidding me?
Exactly. I mean, that was, you know, the idea that they just didn't you remember what they were all saying, you know, I'm done, I'm
yeah.
out, you know.
And Lindsey Graham, the loudest of them all.
Yeah, I mean, they were all saying it, and they were doing it, and very few have stuck with that. I mean, Mitch McConnell's probably the only one, and the only reason that he does that is because, you know, he has to... Yeah, I mean, he has no choice, and he also, you know, he's playing a particular game for his own benefit, which is that he has people, in order to take the Senate, he's got to have some candidates that are capable of running statewide in a way that is not, you know, totally Trumpish in mm-hmm. certain places. I mean, you know, in Alabama, it doesn't really matter, but yeah, and there are places like Pennsylvania where it does matter, and he's got to kind of keep that, you know, keep at least some semblance of mainstream ideology in order to do that. Now, it's not really working for him. Mm-hmm. He failed to attract the candidates that he needed in New Hampshire and in Maryland and in Arizona so far. We don't know yet for
right,
sure, but it doesn't
right.
look that like Ducey's going to take it. But those were all governors that he thought that had statewide, you know, had a track record of winning statewide, that if he could coerce them into running, then they had a chance, you know, a better chance of taking back the Senate. And that's not working for him largely because of this influence of Trump. I mean, these guys are all saying, hey, you know, Ducey in Arizona is saying, hey, Trump hates my guts. Are you kidding me? You know, I can't, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get into that. And you've got Sununu and Hogan in New Hampshire and
right.
Maryland.
And saying
both
no.
of them
right.
saying, I don't want any part of this. This is just no thanks. I'll stay governor. And Hogan thinks he's going to be president, but you know, whatever. He's but you know, they don't want any part of this particular, you know, Washington Republican Party because it's disgusting. And, you know, the only kind of people who really want to be part of it at this point are either desperate, you know, pathetic examples of human beings like Marco Rubio,
ugh.
Who God only knows what's
ugh.
Happened to him. Well, we know what's happened
yes.
to him. He's turned himself inside out to maintain his position.
Power.
It's like
all
nothing's
about the
more
power.
Important.
Nope.
Yeah. Nothing's more important to him. He figures he can outlast, you know, this era and somehow come out, I don't know what, 20 years from now and he'll be president. You know,
yeah.
I don't think so, but whatever, you know, but there are those, but you know, for the most part, the people who are running and certainly all the challengers, as I mentioned, they're all far right wing Trump cult, you know, wing nuts. I mean, these are the craziest people. And in a way, it is not impossible. This is one of the things that I just, you know, keep thinking and trying to say and try to write about is that, you know, Democrats, instead of going into a defensive crouch right now and going out and doing sister soldiers and doing the, you know, Mayberry RFD thing, they need to run against this
yes.
and run against it as hard as they can. And, you know, just sit there and go, okay, you know, you don't like critical race theory, whatever. I'm not for critical race theory. But let me tell you what these guys are for. You want to hear it? You want to hear what they're doing? You know, they're banning, you know, every book they can think of there, but you know, in your schools, is that what you want to vote for? You want to vote for these total nuts who want to, you know, completely outlaw abortion, gay marriage, and everything else? I mean, they need to run against these people who are defending January 6th and defending Donald Trump and doing all that because that, you know, most people in this country, the vast majority, really don't want that. They don't want what these Republicans
right.
are offering.
Well, it's like,
you know,
in Canada. It's like in Canada. The vast majority of the country
yeah.
is not with these truckers, yet the truckers have shut down the country. And that's essentially what the Republicans are doing here. The thing is, the people who are engaged, the Trumpers, the wingnut crazies, are the ones that will come out and vote in the primaries. Because otherwise, if the people that they are putting up in the primaries were the candidate in the general election, you'd say, well, they can't win. in a normal world, right? It would be the more sensible, not that I can't name very many sensible Republicans these days. You usually see them on MSNBC, which is the Never Trumper channel now. But the fact is, all the craziest of the crazies are the ones who are running, who get Trump's endorsement, who are going to win the primaries because that's the faction that votes. And then, you know, then you get to the general when they should lose, but there's so much misinformation and disinformation and Trumpism out there that, you know, stranger things have happened. Donald Trump was in the White House for 4 years.
Yeah. Well, I don't doubt it. I mean, you know, certainly all the, you know, all the historical data suggests that this is going to be, you know, that the Congress will turn over in November. However, there are some mitigating aspects here. The first is that one of the reasons why a Congress will turn over in the first midterm after an election is that many of the people who came in the previous election with the president they were weak and they came in just on presidential coattails. That didn't happen in 2020. You recall? I mean, the Democrats lost seats in that.
Yeah.
So there aren't a lot of those. Gerrymandering turned out to be not as lethal for Democrats as we thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. We assumed that there was going to be a massive loss, and it's more or less a wash. So that is less of a threat. And then you have this total lunacy happening on the right, where they may very well, and I expect they will, nominate, you know, some very extreme candidates. And not only are they extreme, they're also amateurs, right?
Yes.
They don't really know how to run campaigns. Donald Trump doesn't know how to
run
campaigns. And they're going to be fighting over money, and there's going to be a lot. So I'm just here to say that this is not a normal midterm. And the idea of Democrats cowering in the corner and going, oh, you know, no, we need to run to the right, and, you know, it's all so scary, and we're just going to lose, and just this kind of defeatist attitude I see is ridiculous. It's also, you know, it is political malpractice. There is an opportunity here. There's an opportunity for them to come out and come out fighting and come out swinging against this lunacy. And, you know, yes, everybody's in a crabby mood. The pandemic has taken its toll. Donald Trump, 5 years of all that nonsense, it's exhausted all of us, right? I mean, we're just sitting here going, oh, God, you wake up every Monday morning going, what's going to happen now?
You know,
as we were saying. But Democrats can use that. I mean, that is, you know, point the finger. Here's another one. We've got inflation, right? Everybody's upset about inflation. It's upsetting. I mean, you go to the store and everything costs more, and, you know, everything costs more.
Everything.
But, you know, there's apparently an argument in the White House, and I can't believe anybody's arguing about it, is that, you know, among people who are saying, look, you got to come out against this price gouging. There's price gouging going on the part of these big corporations, on the part of a lot of people that are taking advantage of this situation and basically screwing consumers. The Democrats need to come out against that.
I know. Why aren't they?
I don't know. Apparently there's an argument in there. The Council of Economic Advisors in the White House is telling Biden that it's not a good idea, and all the pollsters are going, oh, my God, do it. This is the most popular thing on the agenda. And people will believe it. You take advantage of this populism for our side for once, right? I mean, this is this populist moment that we're having. It isn't just about, you know, some stupid, you know, nonsensical Trump trade wars or some kind of you know, sort of quasi-fascism that they're promoting. There's an actual economic story to be told, and I don't see any reason why the Democrats can't come out and say it. Another example. What in the world was Nancy Pelosi thinking of when she says we're not going to ban stock trading?
Oh, my God. And then she flips on it. And it's like no one should think twice about that. Really? Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, this is ridiculous. I mean, there is a populist, you know, mood in the country. People are pissed. They're pissed at institutions. They don't trust anybody. You know, this is so, you know, the Democrats have a story to tell on that, and they're not telling it.
No.
So tell that story. You know, I mean, there are ways for Democrats to be really aggressive here and, you know, go, look, we've done some stuff. We got this infrastructure bill passed. It was, you know, nip and tuck. We did get it. It's going to mean a lot of jobs for a lot of people. We passed the American Rescue Plan and put a lot of money into the economy. And, you know, the economy is growing like crazy. We've done some good things. And you want to know why we can't do anything else? Because of the massive corporations and this batshit crazy Republican Party over here who is stopping us and stopping you from progressing in your life. And this
right.
is nuts. And,
right.
You know, well, just say it in plain English.
Let me float something here, though, then, Digby, which is the people that are doing the speaking for the Democratic Party are the wrong people. Nancy Pelosi may have had a very storied, you know, great past, and she has been a progressive. I wouldn't call her that now, but she has been one in her career. But her career has gone on for too long. She's what, 83 years old? Go home. Now, she told us this was going to be her last term. But now she says she's running again. She's the wrong spokesperson. I'm sorry. It takes her 20 minutes to spit out, you know, what you just said in two. Then you got Chuck Schumer. Really? The guy who chose, handpicked Kirsten Sinema, who insists on keeping picking candidates like her to champion? Wrong guy. We need somebody who's great on messaging, and those people are not them.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, you know, I have, Pelosi has skills. She has skills that are in running a fractious and, you know, very rambunctious coalition in the House.
But standing up in front of a microphone talking to the American people is not it.
No, and it never has been, by the way. It's not like she's gotten particularly worse. She's just never been good at it. That is not, they should never have had her be, you know, she should have been one of those quiet ones. Like, what was his name, the child molester? Denny Hastert. I don't remember him saying anything, do you?
No, he just stood in, I guess, right in the box and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember him being out there every day speaking on behalf. They had other people. They had Tom DeLay, you know, they had people like that. You know, these they had the people who knew how to, you know, to spread their message. So I agree with you on that. And I also agree that Chuck Schumer, I think, you know, look, it's not easy to run a 50-50 majority, right? I am giving him all that. It's not easy. It was always going to be a challenge to deal with somebody like Joe Manchin, who clearly is a showboating diva who, you know, basically just is loving his moment in the sun.
Oh,
he's,
God.
You know, being the shadow president, essentially.
Yep.
Very difficult to deal with that. But there have been many missteps, I think, over the past few months on the part of Schumer that, you know, we can't prove, then, you know, whether or not it would have been better if he'd have done something differently. But there's plenty of evidence to suggest that he mishandled the Build Back Better, you know, sort of negotiations, because he knew that what Joe Manchin was doing months and months ago. And, you know, instead of dragging it out, it's possible that perhaps he could have just, you know, cut it off at the pass early on. Everybody would have been disappointed, but maybe we would have been better off and gotten something instead of nothing. I don't know.
I don't know.
There's a lot of talk about that, you know, and I don't think that he's, you know, he's certainly, to get back to your point, as a spokesman, is completely inadequate. I mean,
horrible.
I, you know, what? You know, and they're such good spokesmen, I think. There are people in the Senate who are very good. You know, and you can pick them from any part of the coalition. You know, there are some who are sort of, you know, centrist, and there are some who are you know, far more left. And, you know, there are people who are just good at getting out the message, and it's not him. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is, you know, the party has always had these problems, and they tend to, you know, and especially with the Congress, where you want to pick people who have the skills to get legislation passed, right?
Right.
I mean,
that's their
job,
right?
And I get that, and it's also about raising money, by the way. I mean, that's
big
a big
time.
Part of it too. These people need that, you know. I mean, that's their life's blood, but. You know, the idea of, you know, we're in a different era now. It's not just about the sausage making anymore. This is, I mean, look how much power Joe Manchin wielded during this whole thing.
Horrible.
By going before the TV cameras and strutting and posing and preening. And Kirsten Sinema didn't do that so much, but she didn't really need to, because she sort of had this, you know, she created this mystique of, you know, what's Kirsten going to do? And, you know, but they were manipulating the media, and there was, with social media on top of all of this, those skills, as important as they are not all there is to it. You need people who can do it all. You need people who have the capacity to be able to understand how to deal with the public opinion at the same time that they're trying to manage their caucus. And, you know, it's a tough job.
Oh,
right?
Without a doubt. I wouldn't want it.
You know, and by the way, on the Republican side, Mitch McConnell is very good at being the Grim Reaper. And, I have no doubt that he can stop anything that he wants to if he has the power to do it. And he will use that power, as we've seen with the Supreme Court, debacles.
Yep.
He'll do whatever he has to do to do that. But it's easier for him because they have no agenda. The Republicans don't need to pass anything.
Right.
So he doesn't, he can stand there and look like a juggernaut, right? And, he's the most powerful man in the Senate and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, well, that's pretty easy to do if you don't need to pass anything but tax cuts and judges. I mean, that's a pretty narrow agenda.
Exactly. And that's why, they had no platform for 2020. They just reused the 2016 platform.
Literally.
Every word. They didn't even change the part that said we're going to replace the current president,
they announced it.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even attempt to, kind of reword it and rework it a little bit. They just said, no, we're not doing it, which I just love. And McConnell's done the same thing for this election. No, we don't have a positive. We're not going to run on a positive agenda. We're not even going to bother. And it's so interesting to me that, that's pretty successful among their people. And I wonder if it would be successful among Democrats. I don't know.
Well, no.
I wonder, I've always had a little bit of a question in my mind whether it's so smart for Democrats to always be out there touting their 10-point plans. I think about the Democratic debates and all the minutia of all the legislation they were going to pass and blah, blah, blah.
Well, because now the Republicans can show a list of promises that were not kept.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I don't know did anybody really know about, did they vote for Joe Biden on the basis of his better 10-point plan?
Yeah, no, I frankly voted for the D who was opposing Donald Trump. And I wanted somebody else. But in the end, it was a given. I was going to vote against Donald Trump, whoever it was. So, I didn't vote for Joe Biden. I voted against Trump. For Donald Trump to go out there and say, I don't believe that 80 million people voted for him. Well, maybe not. Well, they voted against you. And and what I worry is that now, they're winning the PR war, which makes no sense. So we've only got a few minutes left. What are we supposed to do? Do we need to put AOC out in front? I mean, read the interview she did with The New Yorker. I want more of her, please.
She is so good. And really, and it kind of hurts to think about the fact that she's always sort of saying, I may not stay with this.
Right.
Because I don't blame her. I mean, it's a toxic, waste dump in Washington. Yep. It's not a swamp. It's a waste dump. And I can see why anybody would just go, geez, life is too short to do this. But she is so good. She is, and I say that as somebody who, I consider myself to be pretty mainstream liberal. I'm probably not as far left as some of the members of the squad, in certain ways or on certain issues. I'm a left-wing person, but, I'm not on the far left.
Right.
But I listen to her and I just think this woman has got it. She knows how to talk about politics. She knows how to do it. She knows how to talk about progressive values and goals in a way that makes it accessible to anyone. And she's not the only one. There are others who are in the party too, people in the House and in the Senate. I think, the newer generation coming up, some of them aren't great, but some of them are fantastic, and they have a new, they're sort of equipped with the sort of modern knowledge of how to speak to people in this modern way. And, those of us who are, people like you and I think I'm older than you, but, we've been around a while, both of us. And we are, but yet we're conversant with the modern, you know, with social media and everything, because we live on that. That's what
right.
we do for a
yes.
living. But a lot of people aren't, right? I mean, they're not living in that world. And AOC has the ability to sort of translate that modern way of sort of looking at things, people who, you know, converse on Twitter and podcasts and various other things, to a in a mainstream way. I think she's absolutely brilliant.
So
and
do I. And the thing
I
is,
I really hope she does not decide to leave electoral
oh my
politics.
God.
I would think that I think that would be very sad.
I hope not too. And furthermore, if Nancy Pelosi is not going to step aside, she needs to bring her in and make her a partner so that the next generation is represented. I mean, I've said this a lot recently. Our generation fucked up. We gave you this mess. Time to step aside and let the next generation take over. It's their lives that are on the line here. We're not going to be around to see how this all transpires, probably. But they are. You know, let them have a shot at fixing what we screwed up.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, and honestly, I think that's true of every generation,
yes.
right? I mean, you know, nobody's perfect. You know, I think that the baby boom and Gen X and that, you know, that they made some progress. There were some good things that mm-hmm. happened during that reign. And by the way, Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Well, Trump is. I mean, Trump's actually a baby boomer, but at the very, very leading edge. But Biden and Pelosi are
not.
You know,
they're
older than that.
Right.
I mean,
they're
the 80.
Baby boomers. I know.
Yeah. I mean,
really?
You know, 80-year-olds should retire. I mean, come on.
Agree.
I mean, I'm looking at that, you know, in the years to come. When I turn 80, gosh, I sure hope I'm not, you know, working myself to the bone. Or think about somebody like Dianne Feinstein.
I know.
Oh, my God. You know, what is this woman doing? I mean, we have a Democratic governor. We could point somebody fantastic to the Senate, you know, a young, up-and-coming person. What is she doing? I mean, it's
destroying our future is what she's doing.
Yes.
Right.
And, I mean, she's also, what is she, 84?
Yeah,
I mean,
she's up there.
You know,
I should say it's not only the Democrats, Republicans, too. Chuck Grassley is the oldest, and he's running again. So there's some of it to go around with. These people grab onto power and will not let it go.
Yeah.
Well, it's time to sing Let It Go. Someone needs to do a song parody here.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Let It Go. For sure.
Yeah. So that's my wish for the rest of this year and leading into the elections, that some of these dinosaurs realize that they've served their purpose.
Yeah.
They may have done good work in the past, but that the past is the past. It's time to get with the future. They are not the future. They need to let go and let the next group take over. Without it, I think we lose.
Well, I think we lose. The only scary part of that is that I think I'm kind of afraid of the next generation of right-wingers.
Oh, my God.
They have come up in an era that is just, you know, I mean, I thought the Reaganite kids were bad, but, oh, my God, I don't even want to think about what the Trump generation of Republicans are going to be. But, you know, that's what it is. You know, we have to fight these things out. And, you know, I just hope that in this, you know, and I think maybe that's the transition that I was referring to in the beginning. We're in this big period of you know, change, and generational change is part of it. And, you know, we'll have to, you know, these things just have to be fought out one way or the other. And hopefully the Democrats will get a clue and recognize that, you know, now is not the time to go around sister-soldiering anybody. there's got to be, in fact, in my piece, and Solana did it, you know, we need a popular front. It's got to be everybody.
Yeah.
And you know, progressive have been willing to make that fight. I mean, I don't see any lack of commitment on the part of the left.
No,
to fight the Republicans.
Except they're starting to get pissed off with our own leadership to the point where a lot of very liberal progressives are saying, I just can't with the Democratic Party anymore.
Well, they have to.
I know.
And they will.
I know.
And they will.
Right.
They will. I don't think they're going to be the problem. I think it's the Joe Manchins who are going to be the problem. I think the left understands the stakes. I think it's the Joe Manchins of the world who don't understand the stakes.
And the media, who keeps telling us
that the media,
we've got to do the liberal, they're going too far left. Shut up.
Because it's not true.
That is, you know, get off Twitter. You know, get off Twitter now. All of you people who write for these mainstream magazines, you know, right. Matt Bye and Mike Allen and the rest of you, get off Twitter. That's right. Not the world.
No,
okay?
not at all.
And I'm sorry you don't want to hear about, you know, left-wing concerns or whatever your problem is. That is not the problem. You know, campus radicals. You know, come on. Right. Campus radicals. They're always around. Just keep focused on what's really going on here, and we'll be okay. But, you know, that's another battle. I mean, the media is a whole different thing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We certainly have our work cut out for us, and we should be able to be relaxing and taking it easy. I remember thinking, there's no way the Republicans are ever going to win another election because this country has come to its senses. And then Donald Trump unleashed on us. So. We got a lot of work to do, Digby. Heather Digby Parton, find her, of course, at digbysblog.net. That's Digby's hullabaloo. At salon.com, on the Twitters, at Digby56. And here, when I ask her, I try not to ask too often because I don't like dominating your time.
Oh, I love coming on.
Oh, good, because I love having you on. It's always great. Digby, have a wonderful weekend. And I guess we regroup and do it all over again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Nicole.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Digby, everyone. She's great. And read her blog, digbysblog.net, and read her at salon.com as well. She writes a column there, I believe, twice a week. And with that, we're done. It's the weekend. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Try to unplug and relax and enjoy being, if you can, if the weather cooperates with you. If you're in South Florida, come out to Fort Lauderdale Beach on Sunday, Las Olas and A1A. I'll be out there with some pet paintings and stuff. All right. Have a great weekend, everyone. I'll leave you with the news. Bye. Oop, it would help if I hit the right button.
For Nicole Sandler, what's news from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
With the House already out until the end of the month and the government running out of money at midnight, the Senate on their way out until the end of the month, on Thursday extended government funding until March 11th, kicking the proverbial can down that never-ending road yet again. Both chambers of Congress then return on February 28th, on the eve of President Biden's first actual State of the Union address. All members are invited, by the way, but no guests will be allowed. President Biden on Thursday said there was a strong chance Russia would invade Ukraine, quote, in the next several days. But he warned that Moscow was engaged in a false flag operation to have an excuse to go in. Biden said Russian-backed separatists had created a big provocation with shelling in eastern Ukraine. The Ukrainian government and separatists accused each other of violating a ceasefire. But Russia did expel the number two diplomat at the U.S. embassy in Moscow without immediately saying why. And separately, Russia said in a written statement that the January 26th refusal by the U.S. to accept Russia's demand to halt NATO expansion in Eastern Europe left Moscow with no option but to respond, including with, quote, military technical measures. Well, that doesn't sound good. Russia has repeatedly dismissed the idea that they're preparing to attack Ukraine as baseless accusations. We'll see. President Biden is holding a call Friday with European leaders, and Vice President Harris is meeting with Ukraine's president. So if you're wondering what the average Ukrainian citizen in Kyiv thinks about the situation there, well, you're not alone. So on Thursday's Nicole Sandler show, I called the Intercontinental Hotel in Kyiv looking for someone who speaks English, and on the fourth try, got lucky. I asked the hotel clerk what the situation was there in Kyiv and if they were nervous or afraid.
If we're speaking about like a capital in Kyiv or a western part of our country, it's everything okay. But if we start speaking our eastern part, right. You know, we have war, and yes, because our borders with Russia have a lot of, like, army, and that's all. So our east part is a little bit dangerous. It's not a little bit, it's actually dangerous.
Yes.
So, but in the capital here, in the western part, is everything okay?
Let's hope they stay okay. Stay tuned. A New York State Supreme Court judge ruled on Thursday that the former
occupant of the Oval Office, and two of his adult children, Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump, must testify under oath in New York State Attorney General Letitia James' investigation into the Trump Organization's business practices. The judge wrote in his 8-page decision that James' office, having investigated a business and uncovered, quote, copious evidence of possible financial fraud, clearly has the authority to question the company's principals under oath. Trump's lawyers, of course, plan to appeal. As many parts of the country are loosening their COVID protocols, a new subvariant of Omicron, known as BA2, is reportedly spreading fast and may cause severe disease, this according to research from Japan. New lab experiments show that BA2 is capable of thwarting some of the key methods of fighting COVID-19, including being able to evade immunity created by vaccines. It also appears to be resistant to some monoclonal antibody treatments currently being used to fight Omicron. They tell us that BA2 is highly mutated when compared with the original virus that emerged in Wuhan, China. It's been detected in 74 countries and 47 states. And about 4% of Americans with COVID-19 now have infections caused by BA2, according to the CDC. Who said we should stop wearing masks? Asking for a friend. So, journalist Nicholas Kristof last year left his very good job at the New York Times to run for governor of Oregon. But on Thursday, the state's Supreme Court affirmed a previous decision issued by the Secretary of State that found that Kristof is ineligible to run because he doesn't meet the residency requirements. Kristof, who appealed, said he would respect the court's decision and won't pursue it any further. Police in Canada late Thursday started arresting organizers of the so-called Freedom Convoy that's been clogging streets in Ottawa near Parliament for more than 2 weeks. A spokesman for Freedom Convoy 2022, one of the main groups behind this coronavirus restriction protest, said that two of their leaders, Tamara Litch and Chris Barber, had been arrested. Litch charged with aiding and abetting mischief. Ottawa police didn't immediately comment, but the report of the arrest came shortly after authorities promised the imminent end of the demonstration. And finally, Florida, indeed. The Florida House on Thursday passed a bill that would ban abortions in the state after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Republicans pushed the bill through in a party line 78-39 vote. The Republican-controlled Senate is expected to quickly take up the proposal, pass it, and send it on to the governor for his signature. This bill would establish the state's strictest abortion restrictions since Roe v. Wade in 1973 established a woman's right to abortion access nationwide. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.
Here to set